You know, another person who's not here this morning, if you notice, Debbie and Rachel aren't here this morning. And Rachel's actually over at school dropping off her luggage to go on her senior trip. So they're going to Disney. And let me tell you something. She has been waiting for this trip for 4 years through high school. She's probably been waiting for this trip her whole life. I mean, she's excited to get away with her friends, and that'll kind of be neat. But she's most excited that she gets to go to Disney because she gets to meet all the characters in person. She loves the characters. She doesn't need rides. She just needs to see the characters. She loves meeting Pluto and Ariel and the whole Disney gang. And it's interesting to watch her when we were last at Disney, you know, going up to the characters and liking them so much, because she wasn't always like that. And I don't know if you were like that when you meet big characters and things like that. The first time we took her, it was a bit overwhelming for her, even though she had seen all the characters on TV. She knew, you know, we had told her how nice they were and all of this. When she saw them in person, she got scared. And she didn't want to meet them. But over the years, you know what happened? Her fear turned to excitement, because you know what she did? She kind of put her fears aside and just went up to them and she met them. And you know what she found? She had little to fear. In fact, they were nice. They were big and cuddly and all of this. You know, they were happy to see her and very kind. In fact, there she is with Chip or Dale. I don't know which. but she runs to meet them because she knows, you know what? I don't know what I was so afraid of. And this is actually something we're going to talk about and what we see this morning as we return to the book of Genesis, as we've been talking about the life of Joseph. So this morning, if you have your Bibles, if you don't have your Bibles, you can get the Bible in front of you in the pew and turn to Genesis 43. We're going to be looking at Genesis 43. And as you're turning there, I'm going to bring you up to speed since last week we were on our challenge message. So just to remind you a little bit where we've been with Joseph. Joseph's dad, Jacob, had sent his other brothers to Egypt to find food because there was this worldwide famine going on and they had nothing to eat. So he sends them down to Egypt because he had heard they had food in Egypt. Now, you remember, Joseph's brothers had sold Joseph into slavery and pretty much considered him dead. And this is years later. And so they go down to Egypt because Egypt had food. You want to know why Egypt had food? Because Joseph ended up in Egypt. God blessed him. In fact, God gave Joseph a heads up on this famine coming, and Joseph was made the second in command over all of Egypt. He was a ruler in Egypt. No one had more power than him than Pharaoh, except Pharaoh. So that's how high Joseph was. And everybody who came to get food had to go see Joseph, this ruler in Egypt. So anyway, the brothers come and they get sent to this ruler to buy their food. And when they come in, Joseph recognizes them. But they didn't recognize Joseph, so they don't know it's Joseph. They just think he's one of these rulers. So after meeting Joseph, and he talks to them and finds out all about them and things, he sends them back home with their food. But also, he secretly puts the money that they had brought to pay for the food, he put it back in their sacks as they went home. And he tells them, don't come back for food again unless you bring your youngest brother, Benjamin, who's actually Joseph's full brother. So he wants to see Benjamin. And he says, you know, you have to bring him back if you want to get food again. And to make sure they came back, he took one of the brothers, Simeon, and put him in custody and said, he's going to be in custody until you bring him back. So anyway, the brothers go back home. And on their way home, they had opened up their sacks one night to feed their animals, and they noticed all their money was still there. And they panic. They started feeling very scared. And they started thinking, we just got set up. Guilt started to come to them. Maybe this is because of what we did to our brother Joseph. Maybe God is punishing us. What are we going to do? So they're all afraid of what's going to happen. And anyway, so in that fear, then they come home. And when they get home, their father sees them, and they tell their father what happened. They said, we gave the money, but the money's back in here. Now they're going to think we stole it. What are we going to do? And the father's like, maybe it was just an oversight. Well, we got more news for you. They want us to come back because they're holding Simeon in custody. So We could be in trouble when we come back, but even there's more. We can't come back unless we bring Benjamin. And at that, they all started to think about this, and they balked at that idea. In fact, as they looked at that and as they thought about that idea, they started to say, well, we have too much to lose by going back. So maybe we shouldn't go back. In fact, the brothers, they thought they'd done enough. They'd suffered enough. They were guilty, and they felt guilty, and they felt bad, and they kind of had some bad treatment. So they said, well, we've suffered enough. We don't want to go back and suffer more. And most of all, they misread this ruler that they met, who was Joseph. They misread him, thinking he was out to get them instead of trying to help them. So as a result, Jacob tells all the brothers, he says, we're not going back, and you're not taking Benjamin. In essence, what he's doing, he's dooming his other son, Simeon. But he didn't care about Simeon as much as he does Benjamin. Anyway, so today, here's what we find. As fear continues to grip this family, they continue to spiral out of control before they reluctantly have to go see Joseph. They have to go back to Egypt, only to find that all they were afraid of, they were afraid for nothing when they meet this ruler again. So that's what we're going to find today in chapter 43. I know it was a little bit of a long background, but I want you to be up to speed. So Genesis 43, let's start reading verse 1. It says, now the famine was severe in the land. So it was continuing. Remember, it was going to be 7 years long. This is the second year of the famine, just so you know. We're going to find that out in a couple chapters. So it's still early on in this famine. The famine was severe in the land. And when they had eaten the grain that they had brought from Egypt, their father said to them, go again, buy us a little food. So go back to Egypt and buy us food. But Judah tells them, you know, the man, this ruler, solemnly warned us saying, you shall not see my face or be able to buy food unless your brother is with you. If you'll send our brother with us, then we'll go down to buy food. But if you don't send him, we won't go down to buy food, because he told us we had to have Benjamin with us. And then verse 6, look what Jacob says, and his other name is Israel. Remember, he was also known as Israel. It says, Israel says, why do you treat me so badly as to tell the man that you had another brother? So what we have here is the family's in desperate straits again. They already went through all their food that they brought home. They already went through these 9 sacks of food that they had, and they're in trouble again because the famine was continuing. If they didn't get more food, they were going to die. The only place to get the food was Egypt and this ruler, Joseph, who told them they couldn't come back unless they had Benjamin. And when this reality started to sink in with Jacob, imagine how helpless he feels. He kind of feels trapped, doesn't he? What am I going to do? I have no choice here. He doesn't want to risk losing Benjamin. That would be too much. He already said, if something happens to Benjamin, I'm going to die. So he's feeling pretty exposed. Have you ever been there? Have you ever had circumstances come to your life where you just feel exposed? You feel like, what am I going to do? I can't do anything. So out of fear of what could happen to him, you know what he does? He blames others for the mess he's in. He says, you know, Judah, this is your fault. Why did you tell him you had a younger brother? If you didn't tell him you had a younger brother, we could have just gone back. What'd you do that for? You know, it's not fun feeling like our backs are against the wall, are they? Is it? Situations we might face, and sometimes maybe they're no doing of ourselves, sometimes they are. Maybe it's financial trouble we see as a family, or you have stress at work, or you're kind of getting singled out at school, you're facing problems at school, and you feel like, I have nobody to help me. What am I going to do? I put myself in a situation, and I don't know if I can get out. And when we're not trusting God, we find ourselves feeling very exposed. Like we aren't enough in and of ourselves. And in response, we go into defensive mode, don't we? Have you ever gone into defensive mode when you feel like everything's up against you and you don't know what you're going to do? You go into defensive mode, and out of that defense or out of that fear as a reaction to it, we blame other people. I mean, it must be you that did this. You know, I would have been fine if it hadn't been you doing this. So we start to blame other people because it can't possibly be us that did anything wrong, right? I mean, I know I don't do anything wrong, so it can't be me. It must be somebody else's fault. And we go off and we start blaming other people and putting them down to make ourselves feel better. Because it makes us feel better when we can blame somebody and not have to face the consequences to us and the consequences of failing to trust in God. You know, blame is often our first response from fear. It's a futile act of self-protection, self-preservation. And that's what Jacob's doing here. So he lashes out blaming others. But Judah doesn't stand for this, what we find right after this. Judah hears this and he tells his dad, wait a minute. No, we didn't do this. This ruler, he asked us questions. We just answered his questions. How were we to know that he would make us bring Benjamin back? It's not our fault. It's his fault. More blame. And then he tells his dad something in verse 10. So he defends himself, but then he says in verse 10, you know, if we had not delayed, we would now have returned twice. Come on, Dad, stop stalling. You know, we could have gone to Egypt and been back two times with the time you've wasted with not wanting to just go and bring Benjamin back and do what we were asked. How? And this reveals another response from fear. Not only blaming, but stalling when we feel out of control, don't we? We waste time trying to control it ourselves rather than simply just trusting God. Do you ever think of how much time we waste in fear, being afraid of stuff, or being motivated by fear, rather than having to face God and trust Him? Now, if you remember, Joseph, we talked about this last chapter, from last chapter through the next few chapters, Joseph isn't just Joseph. He's actually portrayed as a type or a picture of Jesus. So by them having this interaction with Joseph, we can apply it to our lives of how we interact with Jesus. So basically, we're saying, man, we don't want to face God, so we waste time. Just like Jacob doesn't want to face the reality, and the brothers don't want to face the reality, so they waste time. Can you relate to that? That we try to avoid God, coming to God at all means necessary. I mean, sometimes He's our last resort, isn't it? We want to try everything else before we go to Him. Try to fix it ourselves. I mean, trusting God, it can be scary. What if He requires something from us we don't want to give? Or what if He gives us something that we don't want? So out of fear, we stall. Maybe we're thinking, you know, maybe God will forget what I did. You know, time, you know, He may forget that I kind of wronged Him, so I don't have to go and apologize because He may forget. God doesn't forget. Or maybe we say, you know, if I delay long enough, maybe I'll figure out a solution. And that way I don't ever have to give up control. It's a desperate place where we start to waste time. And that's where Jacob is. But the reality is, no matter how long we wait, we're going to have to trust God. And Jacob gets to that place in verse 11. Because he says, then their father Israel, Jacob, said to them, if it must be so, then do this. So I guess we got to do this. But out of fear, out of us wanting to kind of keep control here, he says, do this. Take some of the choice fruits of the land in your bags and carry a present down to the man. He says, you know, balm, honey, some nuts, things that we have here. And then he also says, and also take double the money with you, double payment, along with carrying back with you the money that was returned in the mouth of your sacks. Perhaps it was an oversight. So Jacob's kind of run out of options here. So he says, all right, I got to resign myself to the inevitable. They'd have to return to Egypt. They'd have to take Benjamin. But maybe we could still control this situation. Let's bargain. Let's bargain. Let's bring a present. Let's try to butter him up. So we make sure he treats us well. So he gives some gifts, a double payment. You know, bargaining is another response of fear. And we can do this, can't we? We bargain with God. Maybe it looks like this for us. You know, God, I really need this. I really need this, you to work, this situation I'm facing in my life, and I really need you to work. How about I serve more? Or I go to church more faithfully? Or maybe I'm even more patient as a driver. That'll impress you, right? So that you'll do this. So let me do this for you, and then we'll see if it's enough. If it's not enough, I'll do more. Have you ever been there? And you start wanting to do more for God, hoping that he'll be impressed enough to do things our way. And sometimes, as a last resort to trusting God from fear, we try to pay him for what we owe him and maybe impress him. So that's what Jacob does. He sends his sons off to Egypt along with Benjamin. And they're afraid. They feel exposed. Yet they're still hoping to hold on to some of their control, so they, through their efforts, can get what they need. However, when they arrive to Egypt once again, you know what they find? They had little to fear. For this ruler, Joseph, is not what they thought he was. In fact, what they discover about this ruler and their experience they're about to go through is what we ourselves can find when we face our fears and we trust God. There's little to fear. So look at verse 16. They go down to Egypt here. It says, when Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to the steward of the house or his servant, bring the men into the house and slaughter an animal and make ready for the men, are to dine with me at noon. The man did as Joseph told them and brought the men into Joseph's house. But the men, the brothers, were afraid because they were brought into Joseph's house, and they said, it's because of the money which was replaced in our sack the first time that we're brought in here, so that he may assault us and fall upon us and make us servants and seize our donkeys. So they're basically saying, oh no, he's asking us into his house. He knows something. And he's going to finally get us. In fact, he's going to make us slaves. And we'll lose everything. So they're scared, right? So what do they do? What did they just try to do? What did Jacob just try to do with them? They said, when you feel out of control, bargain. So you know what they do? They call the servant. They don't call Joseph. They said, we'll try to talk to his aide. Maybe his aide can put in a good word. So they talk to the steward, the servant, and they bring him aside. And these are the verses right after this. And they say to him, hey, listen, we have a problem. You see, last time when we took the food and we paid you for it, then we went and we were almost home and we looked in our sacks and the money was back in our bags. We didn't steal it. We don't know how it got there. So we brought the money back for you. But the servant replied, verse 23, he said, peace to you. Don't be afraid. Your God and the God of your father has put the treasure back in the sacks for you. I received your money. Did you catch that? I mean, the money in their sacks, that was theirs to keep. He said, God must have put it there. It was a gift. As for the servant, you know what he says? I received your money. How did he get the money if it was put back in their sacks? Maybe a better question. Now, who do you think paid for that food? Who do you think paid the servant for that food? Joseph. You see, the servant got paid because Joseph, when he put this money back in the sack, also said, I'm going to make sure this is paid for, though. Because the servant said, I got paid for it. I don't know what you're talking about. We got the money for the food. Where did they get it? It was Joseph, the ruler himself. He paid their debt for them, so they didn't have to pay anything back. Now, wait a minute. Does this sound a little familiar for you? You know, we owe God. We owe God perfection. We owe God a payment for sin. Yet we can't pay it. So God himself pays it for us, doesn't he? In Jesus. You see, when we face our fears and we trust God, we find our provider. It's God who provides for us, not us. We don't do it through bargaining or paying ourselves or impressing him. There's nothing that we can do that can impress God enough. In fact, we not only find provision for our salvation, but we find that God's promised to provide everything we need. Isn't this what Paul says? And my God will supply every need of yours according to his riches and glory in Christ Jesus. Look at the end of that verse again. How does he supply our needs? According to or out of his own riches in Jesus. Isn't that cool? Just as Joseph provided for his brother's needs out of his own riches, God provides through Jesus for us. No amount of bargaining, no amount of good works or payment can or will impress God enough. Because you know why? God is already impressed with us. In fact, he loves us fully, just as we are. Because every time he sees us through Jesus. So we can come to him every time we have need and not be afraid and not try to bargain with him. Because he loves us completely, so we can come to him and trust rather than fear. So as the brothers, they were taking all of this in, and they said, well, that was weird, that Joseph comes home. And right before Joseph comes home, they're taken into the house, and they're taken care of. Their feet are washed, and they're basically treated really well. And Joseph comes home. And the brothers hadn't fully understood what that gift was about, because they still try to bargain a little bit. It says, then they took their present and tried to give it to Joseph as soon as he came in. Here, we brought you a gift. You know, Joseph, he wasn't interested in what they brought. He was interested in them. It says they gave the present to Joseph, but Joseph began talking to him. He said, how is your father? Is he well? And then he said, this must be your younger brother. This is Benjamin. And at that point, everything got too much for Joseph. He had to leave the room and weep, just as he did the first time he saw his brothers. And he brings himself back together. And in verse 31, it says, then he washed his face and he came out. And controlling himself, he said, hey, let's serve the food. They served Joseph by himself, or him by himself, and he served the brothers by themselves. And then they served the Egyptians who ate with him by themselves. Because the Egyptians, they couldn't eat with the Hebrews, for it's an abomination to the Egyptians. They hated the Hebrews. We had heard that before. And they sat before him, the brothers sat before him, the firstborn according to his birthright, and the youngest according to his youth. So he sat them in birth order. And they're sitting there going, what? The men looked at one another in amazement. Do you know why? Because he was more interested in them than the present they brought. And then it says, portions were taken to them from Joseph's table, but Benjamin's portion was five times as much as any of theirs. You remember back in the beginning of this where Jacob started feeling exposed and he started blaming other people? That self-protection. And they were trying to do everything to protect Benjamin and to protect themselves. So they bring the gifts. They don't want anything bad to happen to them, because they're afraid they're going to get squashed, right? Have you ever felt like that with God, that he's going to squash you? And that's kind of how they're feeling. But the reality is much different, because they get there and they're cared for. And then they're sat down for a feast at the table right in front of Joseph, where the Egyptians usually are. And he puts the Egyptians at a different table. So he's honoring them over the Egyptians and protecting them from the Egyptians so that they don't have to come in contact with, because the Egyptians would try to hurt the Hebrews. So he puts them by themselves at a place of honor, keeping his brother safe. They had nothing to fear. And as for Benjamin, Benjamin wasn't in danger at all, was he? He was so taken care of that he was given five times as much food as anybody else. He was honored rather than being hurt. You see, like the brothers coming to this ruler, to Joseph, when we face our fears and we come to God, we trust God, we find not only our provider, but our protector. We are safe in Jesus. We're as safe can be when we're with Jesus. He loves us at our worst. Romans chapter 5 says, when we were still sinners, Christ died for us. When we were at our worst, at our own most unlovable, he knows our junk that we carry and still accepts us. In fact, God promises to protect us or hold us up when we sin. He reminds us of his grace, protecting us from living in shame. When others try to put us down or to harm us, he reminds us of his power that keeps us safe. In fact, the psalmist in Psalm 91 kind of gets at this, and he's talking as he's quoting God here, what God would say. And he says, but he holds fast, because people, this person, is holding fast to me in love, I will deliver him. I will protect him because he knows my name. When he calls to me, I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will rescue him and honor him. Isn't that what happens in our story this morning? With long life, I will satisfy him and show him my salvation. This is God's thoughts towards us when we trust in him. He's our protector. You know, coming to God sometimes, especially when we don't feel all that lovable, it can be scary. But when we come, we find God, our ever-faithful protector who honors us rather than harms us, because God is our protector. And this is what the brothers found when they meet this Egyptian ruler, their brother Joseph. And it put them at ease, allowing them to enjoy their time with him. Take a look at the very end of chapter 43, the last sentence. I guess it's the sentence that starts with "and." I don't know if that makes it a sentence or not, but it says, and they drank and were merry with him. So not only were they eating, but they were enjoying their time with him. You know, when we face our fears and trust God, we find our purpose. You know what our purpose is? To enjoy our time with God, to abide with him. And that's what they're doing. Instead of stalling like they had been doing or wasting time, avoiding coming to him, they go and they feast with him. You know, instead of us stalling and not wanting to come to God, we can feast with him. We get to enjoy our time as it's spent with him and for him. You see, time spent with God is never wasted time. Do you know that? Because it's here, spending time with him, that we get to know him yet better. We get to know ourselves better. We get to see what he has for us as we share ourselves. In fact, that's what the psalmist in Psalm 37 is getting at when he says, delight yourself in the Lord, abide in him, and he's going to give you the desires in your heart, or he's going to place his desires in your heart. He's going to give us purpose, make our lives meaningful, make our time well spent. You see, with God, there's little to fear. Yet the more we try to hold on to things, to try to keep control of ourselves in the situations we face, the more we worry about the outcome and the more we fear what could happen. And we see this fear come alive in Jacob and the brothers, but we also see it be unfounded as we see Joseph, this ruler, this picture of Christ for us, because in him there's little to fear. Through this, you know what we discover? That when we face our fears, when we trust God with our stuff, rather than trying to control it ourselves, those fears fade away as God reveals himself to us. Reveals himself and said, I'll provide, I'll protect, I'll give you purpose so that your life is well spent. He's the one who can be trusted because he's the one who loves us. So wherever you're struggling this morning, maybe you're here today and you're just like, man, I see these things happening in me in situations I'm faced. I always want to blame people, somebody else's fault, or maybe I just want to waste time, stall, and come to God. I want to go everywhere else. Or maybe you see yourself trying to bargain with God, trying to hope you can impress him enough so that he'll work. And maybe you start seeing these things creep in. I know when I see them creep in, I'm just like, oh, why am I doing this? Because we're being motivated by fear. And even fear of coming to God. You know how we respond to that? Stop. It's as simple as that. Stop it. Realize there's nothing to fear in coming to God. Consider the love that Jesus has for us and come to him because he alone can be trusted. So that's where we leave off with the brothers this morning. That's where we leave off with us. With God, there's little to fear. Let's pray.